Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time to remember this crap with Mike Donahue. Mike, how are you?
Great, Annie. Bears are over 500 in September.
For the first time since 1987. And that's what... Well, maybe not. But that's why, one of the many reasons, that and the fact they're playing the New York Football Giants. That's why indeed, on this exciting edition of Remember This Crap, we are going to hearken back to week one of the 1987 season when the champions of Super Bowl 20 faced off with the champions of Super Bowl 21. Both teams coming off of 14-2 seasons the year before. The Bears, of course, following up a 15-1 1985. So they were 29-3 in their last 32 games.
A clash of the Titans. Do you remember, Andy, and this might be a Mandela memory or effect, but I swear that when the game was announced, could it have been on the cover of Sports Illustrated before the game, dubbed as Super Bowl 21.5? There was a lot of hype. And why not?
So this is a Monday night crew of Al Michaels and Frank Gifford, who had been the crew the year before, and a new addition, everybody's favorite former Michigan Wolverine and St. Louis Cardinal, Dan Dierdorf.
His first appearance in what would be a pretty long run in the annals of Monday Night Football. Would actually rank up there. And honestly, not just to pile on, but we typically do. We've done a few games involving, maybe one, the Bears-Jets game in 91. But even from his very first game, you won't go 10 minutes if you were to listen to the full broadcast, which I did for this game that we're about to sort of, make fun of and enjoy thoroughly, but 10 minutes don't go by where Dierdorf doesn't say something just colossally, like mystifyingly dumb and weird and almost like a non sequitur.
Well, that's kind of his thing. He's retired though, right? Him and Jim Brandstetter were doing Michigan games the last few years on the radio, and I believe they both retired at the same time.
I didn't know they both retired. I just remember because my wife is from Michigan, I've become very acclimated to the Big Mitten over the course of my 20 years of spending much more time there. But I do recently recall hearing the vocal stylings of Dan Dierdorf on the car radio.
Yeah, I believe their last game ever was Georgia just bludgeoning the shit out of the Wolverines.
That's it. And we talked about that, I believe. I think that may have come up, or at least on or off the record, on recording. Yeah. Yeah, Dierdorf had quite a long run there.
So you watched, in preparation for this, you watched the entire game. It's on YouTube. It's like 2 hours, and it's cut down to like no commercials, right? Like 2:20.
Yeah, whoever does, I don't know if it's the same guy. I mean, this is about the fifth or sixth game that we've done. It's the first from this era. There are three that we've done from 85. I feel like it might be the same person. I gotta commend him as a teenager in the mid 80s who recorded a lot of the same shit that I probably have this game stored somewhere in my dad's house. Very diligent to like hit that pause button at right when they were cutting to commercials. So we are spared, which maybe in retrospect isn't such a great thing because it's kind of hilarious to watch commercials from the 80s. But yeah, it's 2.5 hours of game footage, pretty well cut, no missing plays. And I'm going to just tell you that in spite of the low definition and just the sort of the blurriness of the whole translation, I absolutely fucking thoroughly enjoyed myself. I didn't watch it in one sitting, but in the three days that I watched it, very many great memories came back. Enjoyed it immensely.
Well, that's good. So I will on the Pointless Exercise newsletter entry for this, and on Discipio, if you go to this, you will be able to watch the entire thing.
I recommend it.
But what we are going to watch, because I was too lazy to watch all 2 hours and 30 minutes of it.
Oh, you missed out. You're lost, Andy.
I watched.
You're lost.
Also on the YouTube, which is what we're going to be watching here, is a tidy 17-minute and 37-second cut of the same game, which apparently was a show on TV in, I assume, England, and certainly in Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put the screenshot of the very opening here. Mike and I are both looking at it now. It's European Chuggo, very clearly. It's two dudes sitting in chairs with a little. Well, actually, they have a little tiny table, but it's a coffee table shaped like a American football, and their set is tremendous. Mike can enjoy the fact that he gets to see the set here at the DiCiprio Tower, which has the pointless exercise logo hanging on the wall behind me. These guys have basically the 1987 version of that. They have a big sign that says football. Two lines, foot and then ball.
Foot over ball.
Yeah. And it's clearly Kevin Kadick sitting on the left, don't you think?
It's 1987. Either Kevin or it looks like the lead singer of The Fix.
Actually, I think it's two Kevins. I think the guy on the left is Kevin Kadick, and I think the guy on the right is Kevin Fishbane from The Athletic. And he is wearing a Walter Payton jersey.
Almost like a Roland Harper Andy.
It really is. It says Bears on it on the front. And the number is clearly the wrong font. But it does have the GSH on the sleeves. You can see
that's authentic. The blue doesn't seem quite so navy, but maybe that's just the, this video itself, like you say, is old as this game, because I can vouch for this because I do remember being in London in 1995, right after Labor Day, the same weekend the Bears opened the season with a stunning Juan Stedian era opening day victory over the Vikings. Eric Kramer and Curtis Conway connecting at least once, maybe twice. We had to get onto a plane after that game and fly to Great Britain for my cousin's wedding. And we spent the week in Ireland and England. And the next Sunday, we were still there. And the next Monday, I was still there. I was coming back the next day. And that, you might recall, was when the Bears and the Packers played on Monday night, when Brett Favre converted a 3rd and 10 from his own one for a 99-yard touchdown when they burned Donnell Wolford from Robert Brooks. Caught it.
Yep.
And the only reason I bring that up is because I remember being in a bed and breakfast somewhere outside of London on that Monday night, desperately trying to see if maybe I could find some weird channel that would have a live American football. It didn't come close. However, I found a show that was very similar to this. I can't imagine it would be an iteration of the same show, but they were recapping a Dolphins Patriots game from the day before. And that's all that I got, and was not able to watch Brett Favre carve up the Bears. So it's probably a good thing.
Well, one of the men in Blazers, Roger Bennett.
Blazers.
Men in Blazers. It's a American show with two British guys talking about soccer, English football. And Roger Bennett is from England, and he has family who lived in Chicago. And he became a huge Bears fan as a kid. And he wrote a book, which I read.
I've heard of this guy. I've heard him interviewed.
And he came over in '86, I think.
Yeah, he's right in the sweet spot of the Super Bowl era.
But he talks about this was how they. Sometimes they would get a full game, but usually this is how they would watch football.
So this may have been what I saw in 1995. It's only 8 years after this. I don't recall. I mean, I just remember there was something on that the only morsel of American football I could get was a half-hour recap from the day before.
I missed it. I just scrolled down a little bit. Their set is amazing. It says American football.
It's a different color, a different font, I think.
Yeah. But the chairs are majestic. They look like they... Looks like they killed an actual referee and upholstered chairs with his hide.
Right. Or soon Pee Wee Herman's going to be running onto the set that someone stole his chairs. Yeah.
So I did watch this. That was the prep I did. I watched it, and
I didn't have time. I intended to, but I figured when we did this assignment, like, hey, let's, you know, Bears are playing the Giants, right? And we do in this format. Unlike the, for those of you that listen to both the Cubs, remember this crap. It's a little bit more tethered to who the Bears are playing. Just by the quirks of the schedule, this is the third straight year that the Bears have played the Giants. This score, you know, we typically dive into the history when they first face the team, and then we just sort of lazily reran that one last year. Yep. And like, you know, there aren't a lot of memorable Cubs Bears Giants games, but then we kept talking about this one, so I was committed to watch the 2.5 hour version. I meant to watch this, I didn't, so I'm in for a treat, I hope, because I have not previously seen the these
all games. All the important plays are here, but it is cut weird.
Thanks for the warning.
So we'll kind of listen along. It won't take us. We don't have to. You won't have Wayne Walker chirping in the background for 2.5 hours this time.
That's right.
We only got 17 minutes. So we will stop and start. But I think we have to listen to our hosts as they introduce this, because they set
if
it up,
only
they
you
set
can
it up
see.
Brilliantly. Well, no, if they want, they'll be able to go on alpha. This video will be embedded.
True.
They can
true.
Watch.
True. True. Yeah. Check it out, kids.
Games from the preceding 48 hours.
And tonight we've got a very special game between the winners of the last two Super Bowls. It's Chicago Bears versus the New York Giants. And it was only 6 months ago that the Giants were dumping barrels of Gatorade over their coach,
which,
Bill Parcells.
Yeah, of course.
We had two bones to pick right away, right? 6 months ago, Super Bowl wasn't in March. It's not 6 months ago. I know calendars are the same over there, right?
Not a metric calendar. Yeah, Greenwich time is still abides by the 12-month, you know.
And I was hoping that the British were going to crack this case. They show here Harry Carson dumping Gatorade on Bill Parcells
in Super Bowl 21.
I was like, oh, the British, they're going to have the footage of Dan Hampton dumping a Gatorade bucket on Mike Ditka before, proving that the Bears invented this stupid tradition. Not
2 years before, in the Hump Dome of Minnesota, late November 84.
Alas.
Nobody had ever seen that before. But the Giants stole that. So for the record, the New York Giants totally fucking stole that shtick and ran with it. That's pretty second rate for the so-called, you know, first city. But yeah, whatever.
In celebration of their crushing defeat over the Denver Broncos in Pasadena.
Which was par for the course.
The last
for
the time the Giants and the Bears met was in the 85 divisional playoff games. And the key play in that game was Sean Landetta's punt, which was blocked on the 6-yard line.
Punt.
Was it blocked?
As he's showing it on the video.
Now, when I watched, I had Red Zone over the weekend, and so I think it actually happened after the Bears had wrapped up their exciting win over the Texans.
Exciting.
Dolphins punting out of their own end zone against the Bills.
I saw that.
Clinging to a lead, and the announcers
you
even talking about.
You never see that.
Should they take a safety here? Strategically, they probably should just take a safety. And the original angle you saw, and the announcers both thought that the punter literally just kicked the ball backwards over his head.
Oh,
because they didn't see what happened. They saw him kick it. They knew there weren't any Bills near him, and they couldn't figure out how the ball went behind. Yeah. Well, then they saw that his personal protector had back. He was in the end zone. The ball was on the one, so they didn't have the full like 13 yards.
Right,
So they're compressed.
The up back is scrunched.
The personal protector should have inched up, and he didn't. So the punter is closer to him. So the personal protector takes one step back, gets hit right in the ass with the punt.
Did you happen to see where Mark Sanchez tweeted about them stealing his bit? That was good, right? That was like a butt fumble.
There were two vindications over the weekend. There was now a butt punt to go with the butt fumble, and Dan Orlovsky, who famously just ran out
of the end zone.
Jimmy Garoppolo did the same thing on Monday night.
That's how they lost? That's how you give up the safety? They lost 11-10. I didn't even see that game. I just saw the score. Wow.
Well, they gave up the safety. They had the lead late. It wasn't because of the but that was it was the decisive point. Was Jimmy?
I want to mention this. I want to mention backwards. This now. That's incredible. I want to mention this now because we're about these guys, and we've talked about this before. I was at the game. I was fortunate enough as a 13-year-old to be in attendance in this cold-ass January of 86 when the Bears were just burning a path to the championship. And this is the last time they faced the Giants before this game that we're playing. And in this game, many of you know, Giants punter Sean Landetta whiffed on a punt in the swirling, freezing Arctic air of Soldier Field. It was early in the game, so, you know, we were never too worried anyways, Bears fans, but it kind of set the Bears on their way, and then they don't face each other. I only bring this up because I don't know, since I hadn't watched what they cut out here, but having watched the rewatched this game, it is pretty fucking hilarious. First thing I'm gonna say is the Soldier Field crowd, even for that old dump, kudos to them. They were really hilarious during this game, and it just felt like you could just hear through the ABC broadcast the mocking of Sean Landetta the first time he came onto the field to punt. And Jim Rebar, longtime Soldier Field PA announcer, you hear his name, you hear, and he, Landetta in this game, and I don't know if this video is going to catch it, he had a brutal game. And I had forgotten that. Everyone remembers this kick in 85, in the 85 divisional playoff game. It's iconic, and it's like certainly a stamp in the Bears season. But it's hilarious that, you know, not too long after both teams are still in this elite sphere, that Sean Landetta still could not fucking kick at Soldier Field, even on a warm September night. So I wanted to throw that out there now in case it doesn't, it might have been too subtle for the 18-minute cut.
And Madden deserved a lot of credit for, he seemed to spot it immediately during the championship game. He's like, because right. Summerall was like, a punt blocked by, I forget who they thought blocked it. Gale's when it picked
Sean Gale. Scored, right? Gale scored the touchdown, yeah.
And they show, as the first replay is rolling, Madden just yells, I think he whiffed. I think he just whiffed.
And he there's did. A combination of the wind and him fucking just freaking out about this Bears defense that, which, you know, we'll talk about it tonight. We've talked before around this time, just the throughout the course of a game were just a terrifying menace. So
the Bears won the game 21-0 and then went on to win Super Bowl 20.
21-0. That's how they say.
Nil. Fucking A.
Nil.
He didn't say love.
Now we go over to Soldier Field, where before the game, Al Michaels talked to injured quarterback Jim McMahon, and Frank Gifford talked to Lawrence Taylor.
Okay, so Euro Kev here, he teases both interviews, right?
Yes.
Well, you listen to what happens.
Out of order, right?
I've been called everything. I've been called, you know, crazy, a dummy.
I've been called a cokehead.
I've been called the greatest linebacker.
Eventually, I'll be called a statutory rapist.
I've been called everything. I've been called selfish, conceited. Right, I am. And I kill quarterbacks on Sunday.
So. They even call me a linebacker, even though I line up outside of that.
I'm like an assassin or a train killer. You know, you.
Are you? Is that what you are, Lawrence?
You give me a job, and I'll try to get it done the best way I can.
You know who else does that? Milkman. He does the same thing.
I have a lot of fun on Sundays, and anytime I go out there and play football and be able to hit people and hear them hurt, it's a lot of fun.
You know, that sounds strange to people who don't know this game, but that is a thrill, isn't it?
Isn't it interesting, well, Frank, talking to a defensive guy about just annihilating someone? Didn't Frank miss an entire season because Chuck Bednarik hit him so hard he missed the entire next year?
Yeah. And it's something I think about when watching this game because the 85 Bears are still alive in this game, as we'll see.
Frank's like, you know, Lawrence, you know what I like to hit? Stewardesses.
Yeah.
But in a very consensual way.
Hit on. Yes. Yeah.
Well, you know, fans don't want to turn on the football game and see Powder Puff. They don't want to
see people Puff, whatever that is.
Tagging guys down or
right. LT's in the camp of, like, yeah, let's not protect the quarterback. Of course, he's a defensive player.
You genuinely enjoy that, don't you?
I really do.
Yeah. Maybe 5 seconds. That's the Jim McMahon interview.
We don't get the Jim McMahon interview.
They show him for a second, and then they cut right to the
Yeah, first of all, Flock of Kevins introduces it as Jim McMahon and Lawrence Taylor, but then it actually comes out as Lawrence Taylor goes first. So that's a little confusing, and then Jim McMahon gets caught up. I will point out, all right, real quick, petty grievance in our household where we're just being second city, not going to give credit. LT, of course, was the reigning MVP, which to this day is only the second time a defensive player has won the MVP. Of course, we've talked at length about the first one, which is Alan Page, and nobody has won it since. But the one dig my dad would get was, they're the greatest linebacker. They have four linebackers. He's on the outside. You know, of course, we're in Chicago. We've got linebackers in the middle of the field. LT obviously revolutionized the position, but at the time, we were not going to give him any credit. And he was a cokehead, so we get to, you know, unfairly just throw that on the pile, too. But he was the reigning MVP, which, again, defensive player has happened since.
Robert Quinn wasn't the NFL MVP last year?
He fucking should have been.
He had 18 and a half sacks.
No. Yeah. And, you know, and we should also point out the Bears and Giants did not play a lot, oddly enough, right? Like the Bears, played the 49ers, never really overcame the 49ers, right? And like in the playoffs, like the Blackhawks did with the Red Wings and the Cubs did with the Cardinals. They oddly enough didn't go through San Fran, but they did beat Washington. It kind of felt like the Giants weren't really on that much. They hardly ever played in the regular season. This is like the only time in the 80s, I think, that they would have faced each other. So we didn't face Taylor a lot, but he still, I don't know, four or five times, he did not record a sack until his last game in 93. Somehow he was never much of a menace for us. I mean, I'm sure for Redskins and Eagles and NFC East fans, he was a goddamn nightmare, but he never really registered for us, right?
I mean, the somehow was Jimbo Covert.
Exactly. 100%. 100%. You'll see it today. The Bears' O-line here is one of the, this is the hell of a performance.
So this is interesting. The very first play we see is the Bears punting. So just quality offense on the first possession.
Well,
apparently.
The starting quarterback for the Bears, they talk about it. Al and Frank and Dan is, it's Mike Tomczak, the undrafted rookie free agent from 2 years earlier. And this is a team that just won the Super Bowl and has only lost, like you said, has lost three games in two seasons. And so that probably speaks to why the Bears didn't really make it back to the Super Bowl. But
so McMahon is still out recovering from the shoulder surgery from the Charles Martin hit, right?
I think that's the timeline. I don't know if he tried to come back after the Martin injury made it worse, like Mark Pryor or anything, but all of that kind of started from that.
Well, he ran. Jim McMahon, ironically, also ran into Marcus Giles. I don't know how he did. Marcus was just a little kid.
Couldn't help it.
Tripped over.
Couldn't help it.
And,
but yeah, so McMahon starts. McMahon is still our guy. We need McMahon. We know that. We never had a backup plan. It really is a critical flaw. Maybe other teams didn't do that nowadays. Of course, you should have a solid backup. And I was surprised to see on the sideline. I had forgotten that Doug Flutie came back. I thought the whole thing was such a disaster and it alienated the team so much, how Ditka camped for him, that I just thought after that playoff loss the previous year and the stunning loss when the 14-2 Bears, they followed up a Super Bowl championship 18-1 season by going 14-2 and then going kerplat, and there was tension. But yeah, Flutie was the...
Well, that's quite a quarterback.
They went out and
they had then. So they had McMahon, who was rehabbing. They had Tomczak, their starter. They had Flutie as the backup, and then they had rookie
first round draft pick,
good old number 14, Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, not Ken Mastroli. Jim Harbaugh was wearing 14 as a rookie.
Who was wearing 4?
Fuller was gone. I don't. Maybe nobody. Maybe Harbaugh. I don't know. Maybe because he settled on 4.
Equipment guy's probably like, Jim, I'd have to make 4. Right. I don't want to sew today. Here, take fucking 14. Wear that. You're not going to make the team anyway. Now I'm going to make the team. I'm going to be around for 10 years.
You're a late first-round draft pick. I think it really is a tragic flaw, as you'll see in this game. In this game, oddly enough, we'll maybe discuss it when we get to, but it turned out to be probably Mike Tomczak's shining moment, ironically enough. At least the third quarter was just like this ridiculous spectacle.
And the Bears have a new fullback in this game as well.
That's the other thing.
A completely miscast fullback.
This is, well,
but they
a fullback.
One of my favorite Bears of all time, Neil Anderson.
Yeah. Neil looks good.
Instead of just having him like, we're going to give Walter a rest once in a while. We're going to play Neil. They're like, nah, we're just going to play them both at the same time.
And so Insui was still on the team, as we'll see, who does some stuff. So, it's an interesting time because of the Bears are still – they are legitimately one of the most elite teams in the league. Peyton, though, which is funny because this is about the fifth or sixth time we've done this, and it's spanned about 12 years. We did a game, as some listeners will recall, that stretches back to 79 when Peyton was spectacular and surrounded by mediocrity. A team that managed to eke into the playoffs. And then we've done 3 games from 85 where Peyton is old, but it makes it more exceptional because he is so old and so productive for an awesome team. So it's great to see. And he's putting the Niners away on the last drive and just, all of that. And, by the game we did in 91, he was gone. So when you watch this game, warning, if you watch Peyton, it's a little bittersweet because, he fights and he gets his yardage. But I do remember 87 was just – he had already announced his retirement, right? It was not a game of cat and mouse like all these assholes do today. You know, Dr. J did the same thing the year before, and you know, got the whole tour, and like, so everyone knew it. And and Anderson, the first round pick right after they won the Super Bowl, was in his second season and didn't really do much that first year because Peyton was still racking up like 1,300 yards. You know, what are you gonna do? Fucking put, it'd be stupid. But it was pretty clear when you watch this game, and it's a little painful, but it's the, he still has some good moments, and it's cool because the Bears kick ass and they're still elite. But yeah, from the Walter Payton perspective, a little sad at times.
So anyway, the first play we're going to get is new punter. Why did I forget that they had changed
punter? Brian Wagner.
Brian Wagner. No more Maury Buford.
But Maury would come back.
Brian Wagner number four? Maybe he could maybe –
No. Brian Wagner's 15. They got Mike Phipps's approval to break out the 15. Yeah, so Maury came along in 85, and then I think, I don't know, maybe pissed off Ditka, but he came back. So Maury ended up being all the way through the Ditka run, but at some point he was gone. We got this guy, Brian Wagner.
Maybe Maury got a better offer. He was selling Chevys or something for a while. And
could have been.
Finally came back to punt.
To go downfield to his second, maybe even his third receiver. So good job that time by the Bear offensive line. Brian Wagner won the job from Maury Buford. Had his punt blocked.
Maury got caught.
It's Tom Flynn for the touchdown. Flynn blocked the punt against Green Bay.
It's revenge of 85.
Touchdown. It was blocked by Eric Howard, the backup to Jim Bird at nose tackle. He blocked it, and Flynn picks up this year where he left off last. Touchdown.
So it was a bad snap. Wagner had to jump for it, and it was the line was a sieve. Half the Giants were in the end zone before Wagner went to punt it. So the Giants, who famously didn't score in the NFC Championship game, their last visit to Soldier Field, immediately score on special teams in the same end zone that Sean Landetta was doing his whiffing.
Yep, I guess it would be right. Yep, you're right. So, wow, I hadn't even considered that. Whoa.
So here you go. Now Mike Tomczak in the game of the century is already down 7-0.
Was that even the first drive? Yeah, whatever. That's the first score of the game, regardless.
Pre-game show, it pays off for the Giants right here. Good move by Howard. He comes around his man. He's right in the face.
What's Chico? Who'd Chico Rivera block? I guess he blocked.
Right from the right side, number 74, Eric Howard. There it is. Doesn't go for the punter, goes for the ball. 2 yards in front of the kicker and gets the block.
Oh, really? Thanks, Dan.
That's what they always must remember. You do not.
Oh, and
we have
great kicker here. Raul Allegri is the Giants.
You brought him up before because he beat the Bears in overtime for the Colts in 83. And then Ditka punched the locker in.
Three snapper, John Addicks was hit.
Okay.
All right. So now the Bears have the ball on their
Fox box, so we don't know what the down and distance or anything is.
Still the first quarter. Bears have the ball on their 25, and it's a very interesting formation right away. Your backfield is Matt Sui and Emory Moorhead. Peyton is lined up as in like the wing over there. Ed Hughes. He's offensive genius.
Yeah.
Neil Ed Hughes. Has been shouldering most of the work.
Moorhead went in motion. I was playing tight.
Second and nine.
Peyton in motion.
Tom back, looks to Peyton. Has Walker at the 10-yard line, and that's all. He is.
Oh, they're on the. My bad. They were on the Giants 25. So we picked this drive up already in motion.
Yep.
So now they're down to the 10.
4 yards shy of a first down. It's going to be a big third and four coming up. Carson making the stop.
That's Jim Rebar in the background. That's
the
first.
Oh, there's Sui. Back in to protect Mike Tomczak. He didn't have to pick up anyone. Releasing Walter out into the pattern. A versatile player is Walter Payton. His hands are as good as his legs. There's not much
His hands are as good as his legs.
Like, you're just failing in your first game, Dan. Like,
I mean, he can't.
You're trying.
Walter could run on his hands, right? Didn't we, when we see him, like, doing that down
there
in practice?
Supposedly he could walk the length of a football field on his hand, like on a handstand where he's just walking on his hands. I don't know why.
Meant.
Maybe Dierdorf's just got some stage for, like, it's his first game. Like, what can you say about, at this point, Walter Payton has been, like, for 24 months, the NFL's long all-time leading rusher. Like, he's absolutely fumbling it. Just shut up, Dan, all right? Because, like, even Frank eloquently in 85, like, they would just say things that quietly, like, just shut up. Like, you don't have to tell us anything. Like, his hands are like his legs. The guy's, just shut up.
Breaking news. Walter Payton, good at many football things. Thank you, Dan. Not the best of business for nothing.
Can't do. This drive,
nothing he can. All right, it's big third and five.
So thus far, 4 yards for Tom Zack at the helm. It's third and four at the 10. And Tom Zack puts it out to Suey.
God bless you, Matt Suey.
About the 7 yard line. So here's Ditka's first decision now. Fourth down and a yard.
Fourth and one at the 7. Got to go for it, right? I mean, here's Mike Ditka.
No. Going for it. Yeah.
Although we find out in this that apparently they've already had a fourth and one in this game, and they didn't make it.
I believe that's right. Was it Payton? Because they converted some other short yardages later where Tom Zach just took the sneak. They decided to do it.
At the 7.
In first.
Look at Dick in the suit.
Fourth and one.
Yeah, so we got to do a Ditka check, right? Because there's all very, you know, the guy was a coach for 11 years, all kinds of different motifs. You've talked about perma Ditka, which is kind of the early years, but I think the perm would come back. There was like the Lions main Ditka. There was the guy that would wear like the Bears, like kind of like pullover, not a hoodie. And well, then you'd sometimes
see a guy wearing that sweater in the background. Yes, behind Ditka.
This is what he wore during the Super Bowl. And so did Buddy Ryan. And so then at some point, and this could be the first ever game. I mean, here's another thing. The Bears, we've talked before that until like 1989 when ESPN got their beak wet, primetime games were not guaranteed to anybody. So that we would go years, the Bears were never on Monday night. Of course, now they're getting to be, you know, on a lot. I feel like this might be one of the first games with Ditka absolutely like rocking a goddamn suit. Maybe not though. I do think he kind of alternated. He'd go through all these different looks. It's kind of funny. It's why I, you know, made sure we do a Ditka check because the many faces of Mike Ditka.
He doesn't just have a suit on. He's got a suit on. He's got a pocket square. You can even see on his tie, he's got like the little tie pin. I mean,
there's a point in this game because again, I watched the whole thing where. He must have just opened up his first restaurant, not the one that it was on Oak Street or Chestnut. It was actually out by the Ontario entrance ramp. There was a Magnum's there in the later 90s. But Ditka City Lights, I think it might have been called. Mm-hmm. They make a reference, Al and them. They talk about the restaurant. And this is obviously, it doesn't have to be said, but it might as well, because I know there could be some people that didn't live through this. But we are really just getting further into like the sort of peak Ditka. I mean, he's enjoying it, and the team is awesome. So, like, nobody would ever dare even call him out at this point because, again, they've lost 3 games over 2 years. And he's kind of on top of the world right now,
I mean,
frankly.
I guarantee you, knowing Ditka the way we know Mike Ditka, part of the reason for the suit is this is peak Ditka. Like, he's still in great shape.
Yes.
He looks good. And across the way is the rumpled Bill Parcells in that lumpy fucking giant sweater and the front butt.
Good point.
And I guarantee you, Ditka's like, fuck it. I'm going to dress like this and that schlub over there. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to keep and maybe also knowing how Ditka that, you know, maybe Bigsby and Carruthers came by and
he's clearly getting paid commercials. Ditka wouldn't walk across the fucking street if he didn't pay him $20 to do it.
In the first period,
there's Bill.
Exhibit B, right, looking like a – no wonder why Bill Belichick dressed like a slob. He was Parcells' sniff.
Did you see Calvin Thomas? So Ditka stands there for a minute, turns, and says, kick it. And Calvin Thomas is like, motherfucker. He's all pissed off. He's ready to go. Stand right in front of the great Cap Boso.
Is that Cap Boso in 86? Because there's an 86. I couldn't figure it out.
That's
the
him,
year
right
after
you can
Brad
see
Anderson. So he was on the team as late as 91. So I didn't know Cap Boso was
Cap
like shit. He hung around forever. Yeah,
Cap had a long illustrious.
I didn't know he had such a long run. Wow.
We're already done with Tim Reitman, right? Isn't he like?
Yeah, I think Reitman. Reitman
blew out his knee or whatever, and he's off to being a backup under a stunt
he's
double on Magnum PI or some shit.
Green Actors Guild card. Yeah, he's out of football by now.
And he's going to go for three. And how much of his decision was based upon the fact that he's already tried it once on fourth and one and got stuck in the line of scrimmage.
I forgot what that play was. Field position, giving
the 24-yard field goal.
Go ahead and go for the first down, but I think Mike has lost a little confidence up front.
Kevin Butler with Jim Harbaugh, the rookie.
Lost a little confidence. I don't know.
So I know.
I mean, you got Tomczyk. Go ahead.
Al tells you who the holder is. It's a rookie, Jim Harbaugh. He does it every time there's a kick.
He does. He does. Well, you know, descriptive.
Yeah, but it's not just Harbaugh to hold. He's still he's the Michigan rookie every fucking time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's fully identified.
I don't know if he's kissing Deardorff's ass. Or...
Good point. 24-yard attempt. And good.
The other thing, folks, if you go back and watch this, right behind Jim Harbaugh, as he kicks it, there's a towel. He came out with a towel. He threw a towel on the field. Apparently that wasn't a no-no back then. Maybe it's the Harbaugh
rule. Right.
So a nice, well-conceived, well-run drive by Tomczyk. Results in 3. 1:39 to go in the period.
Okay, so
first and goal.
7-3.
So now we miss quite a bit of meat. Because here it is now, the Bears' second quarter. 1:02 to go in the half. Bears have the ball at the Giants' 8.
Yeah, these British really don't know how to cut up a game, by the way.
At the 8-yard line.
I don't know why they would show that play of all plays that they...
Well, they're going to show the rest of the drive. But Neil Anderson's in at halfback. Walter is on the bench.
There, I think by this point, rookie in his first NFL game, Ron Morris, has made his first reception. He made 2. And in my head, I remember thinking, did I dream that Ron Morris caught a touchdown in the game? And then I'm watching this. He makes a nice catch in the first quarter. Oh, no, I must have not dreamed that. I must have dreamed that because that's the catch I'm thinking of. And he does actually, you'll get to it later, catch one. But...
So I don't know.
So Ron Morris did make a catch at one point, his first NFL catch shortly before where we're at here.
So I don't know if you noticed this when you watched the first time. So Neil Anderson's in a halfback. So they're showing Walter. Walter's standing next to the bench, looking, you know, a little pissed off. They're at the 8, and he's not in the game.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah. So he walks over, sits on the bench. Now watch what happens for the if you guys are watching this.
Yep.
There's a trainer who is handing Walter some pills. And there's Walter. Al's like, they're retaping him, and they are. They're taping his ankle. But Walter
is
holding some pills in a Gatorade cup.
Meanwhile,
and
getting re-wrapped.
There go the pills.
Yeah. Well, it's right the NFL.
The sideline. Hey, Walter, you like some painkillers?
Sure. Right.
There, I'll take it.
Because, like, Peyton
could be vitamins, or it could just be a little Advil.
Peyton, even though this would be like his first statistically down season, is a freak of nature. And in the full broadcast, these guys, of course, they do, you know, give him justice. And you know, he's 30. Here's a fact that these guys bring up at one point in the game that Peyton, I believe this is his 169th consecutive game, right? And they bring up two players that are second and third of active players. One was, and I can't remember his name because, God, he was so unknown. I think he was like a Detroit running back between Billy Sims and Barry Sanders. I heard the name of James Jones or something. I can't remember. The other one was Kurt Warner. Not that Penn State, Seattle Seahawks Kurt Warner. And I wish I committed. I think they were tied at like 24. And Peyton was at 169. Like, or what it was that their consecutive game streak both of them only went back 2 years. And at this point, Peyton still, as you watch this game, Peyton is on a streak of 106 dating back to 1975. Dating back, has not missed a single NFL game for a running back who is at this point now 2 years running the all-time leading rusher in NFL.
He played in 190 of 191 possible games.
So I'm off. Whatever this is would be 170.
He would play 11 more after this. So this was.
I don't know if they count the playoff games either, but
this was 179.
He started to rack those up. 179, not 169. Got it.
Yeah, he missed the game, but he did. The only game he missed was in
his rookie year.
Was in 75.
Because he would play on special teams. He didn't really start being a running back till like the end of his rookie year.
Yeah, he only started 7 games of the 14. Yeah. He started half the games in 75. And they start every game after that.
Incredible. In case you don't know that, and in case you forget to appreciate it, stop and let that sink in. So
what do we got? We got second and goal from the close to the 8. So Neil got no gain. Neil's in at halfback. Matt Sui is playing fullback, and they're lined up. You could tell, I think, that they have put in a bunch of new plays for Neil and Walter to be together. And with Walter out, Sui is running the other one because he's not lined up as a fullback. He's lined up as like a second halfback. Great use of Matt Sui.
Interesting formation.
Second and goal, a half a minute to go in the half. Morris in motion. And Tomczak over the middle to Sui. And Sui is down inside the 1 yard line.
It's hilarious right now. Can I provide context to Dan Dierdorf losing his shit, which is hilarious? In this situation, this is a very weird – this is the end of the first half. I watched this game. All right, what happened, just what we saw there was Tomczak hitting Sui coming out of the backfield inside the five, and he almost made it to the goal line and got stopped short. It was a weird stutter drive that was almost Nagy-esque, I think, at some points. I can't remember some of the specifics, but I did watch this recently in its length, in its entirety. And I think at this point, the Bears are still down 7-3, I believe, because they would score on this drive, spoiler alert. But it was a drive where they actually – and Tomczak was very unsteady until this drive. It was like, holy shit, we're on prime time. We don't have a quarterback. At one point, Tomczak was – this is a fact – was 9 of 21, and this is mostly in the first half. It was just wasn't clicking. I mean, we're watching something where you're seeing positive plays, but it was a bit of a slog. But they put together this drive, stops and starts. But then they weren't necessarily – it was almost more in spite of themselves, the coaching staff. Like, they weren't really managing the clock that well, but it wasn't hurting them. And Dierdorf here is freaking out that – they get only because what happened was they got a first and goal at the 4 and got a delay a game, which is admittedly unforgivable. And so that's why in that play to Sui, it's a second down, it's a second and goal from the 9.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, they have 2 timeouts. Yeah. Okay, just let that sink in. And what's funny is that it was brought up earlier is that they let the clock run down at one point, which may or may not have been like dubious. They had all 3 timeouts. Ditka was saving his timeouts or whatever. And one was used, and it was used at a weird spot, I think. But they had 2. And on this play that we just watched, they get down to the 1, and the clock's ticking. But they have 2 timeouts. It's going to be 3rd down, and right. It's going to be the last. They have plenty. And Dierdorf is like losing his shit, like, because he's just like this Chip Carey thing where, like, sometimes guys just can't beat the moment and, like, keep it under. I know it's prime time. I know this is a lot of hype here, but it's like announcers, they get so out in front of themselves, and somehow Dierdorf's got it stuck in his head that the timeouts are an issue. It's like, settle the fuck down. That's not what's going on.
The Bears are going to run on 3rd down, and if they don't make it, they're going to call a timeout, and they're going to kick a field goal. Most likely.
And then they're going to go for it again.
But there's 2 plays left in the half.
They have a timeout. So, like, either way, like, they're in control. They're not going to – no one needs to fucking panic. Calm down, Dierdorf.
Moron.
They call a timeout. They take the timeout with 13 seconds inside the 1 yard line.
Well, there's a situation where Mike Tomczak has got to stop the clock quicker than that.
Why?
No, he doesn't.
Tries for the goal line. Definitely not in.
Yeah, so what?
Made a very young mistake.
You're saying he didn't call time right after he was down.
Made a very young mistake. That's what Frank says.
Yeah, excuse me. Frank's buying in.
Waiting for the arms of the official to go up in the air.
They have 2 timeouts, assholes.
Continue to tick off.
Yeah, who cares?
Well, they've taken enough time off the clock so they don't have to worry about the Giants if they score. But what they have to worry about right now is not getting it into the end zone.
They have a timeout still, Al.
So this game is 35 years ago. This game, right? 1987? Mm-hmm. Is that my math?
No,
right?
Almost to the day.
35 years later, Al Michaels still doing games.
Good point.
He's still good. Like, yep. he's not just hanging on. He's probably still
he's the worthy heir to Vince Scully.
Yeah.
Is also 3rd down. They have 1 timeout.
Like thank you. For,
I like that Dick is yelling at Thompson. It's basically, don't fuck
right.
Just whatever you do, asshole, don't fuck.
His weight down to the point now where Ditka says he could be used.
So they talk about the fridge.
But there he is. One of the problems with that right now is Perry hasn't been out on that field for a long time. And he is not what you would call loosened up and warm and ready to go in there. And I think that probably would be one of the things that would mitigate against his being in there as a running back.
I don't know what Frank's
saying. Hard for me to imagine that he's not loose.
So I didn't get Deardorff's joke. It's either he's a fat guy, so he's always loose. That doesn't make any sense. Or the fact that they show him on the sidelines, he's just standing there yucking it up with Dorsett.
Right.
It's not like he's all that. You know, I think maybe that was it. Like, he seems very relaxed.
Maybe. You're kind to Deardorff.
But what they do, and I think they'll say it here in a second, I thought by now, 2 years afterwards, the fridge thing was basically...
No! Because
he had fumbled in the preseason and the week before.
No, and next time...
Or jumped offsides.
I'm going to remember some crap here.
Okay.
Al Michaels. I wonder if Al was excited about broadcasting a fridge touchdown, but again, I realize that this is Al's second season, and I don't know what the Bears were on Monday night in 86. I don't know if the fridge got in. But Ditka did not give that up, and there was a game in 87, which was the only game that Jim McMahon ever threw for 300 yards, which is like a thing for me, which is funny what happens in this game with Tomczak because he comes awfully close, is that it never happened for us. We were living in an age when, like, Dan Marino and Joe Montana and, like, Ken O'Brien and, like, all these, like, guys are and the Bears could never – not even McMahon, even if he was healthy, could never, you know, because of the Bears' offense, couldn't throw for 300 yards. It was just, but in 87, he did it on a Monday night game in Denver, McMahon, but it was a frustrating game. It's also on YouTube. And in that game, one of the things that happens is that Fridge fumbles at the goal line and the Broncos recover. And I don't think Ditka ever, after that point, I think that's what it took. The other side.
Was that in Denver?
Yes. It was very frustrating. I remember watching it as a 15-year-old. And how angry, like McMahon was valiant, and he finally got to that elusive 300 yards, like 302. But they lost, and it was a game, a stupid game they just pissed away. And that was one of the things, like, you know, Ditka's still fucking around with Fridge. They talk about it in this game, too, by the way, before, yes, is that Fridge, his weight went up from his rookie year, and so Ditka would hang it over his head like Damocles' sword. I'm not going to put you in the backfield if you're a fat ass. And so they do talk about that at other points in this game, that Fridge's weight is a, you know, week-to-week fucking soap opera.
But. Do you remember one of Wani's finest moments in Denver
when he tried to pass to Jim Flanagan? Yeah. We've talked about that. Yeah, similar thing. Something happens in Denver. Yep. People get gimmicky.
We'll just give the ball to our defensive guys.
Yeah. So
he is sort of revolves when he moves, doesn't he?
Shut up.
Last week, though, Mike put him into the backfield for a short yardage situation.
Yeah, you mentioned this.
The Raiders, and he jumped offside.
That's how I knew.
Oh, that's what it was. He didn't fumble. He jumped offside. Which is
worse. The other thing, I do you see who's playing who the extra tight end is on this goal line play?
Steve McMichael. Is that who I see?
Yep.
Oh, I love it.
And they're the Bears. It's a goal line. Okay, now this is the opposite. I defended the Bears on going shotgun in Green Bay a couple weeks ago. But check this out. This is the 1987 Bears. They are at the goal line. Everybody but the center is in a four-point stance at the goal line. They are as low as you can get.
Wow.
Including Steve McMichael.
15 seconds. Thomas and Sanders are the running back.
Oh, and Calvin jumps off sides, but he goes in motion. That should have been.
Yes. Should it have been? I don't know the rules well enough.
I think because he comes to a stop again, and then he tries to go.
And then
again.
He went back, and he went back into his 3 points, and then he went into motion.
Yeah, so I guess so what you'd have to rule as the ref is, was he set the second time long enough? Like, if you jump and you just turn it into motion, you're fine. But Calvin, jumps,
yes, he went back
for a second, tries to get back in stance, and that's like fuck it, right. He goes in motion. Well, and they just don't call.
And they actually do point that out as a running back, you're okay, you know. If you're in the backfield.
Because there, he literally resets. He doesn't. He's not there for a second. It should have been on. But you can't stop Mike Tomczak from a half yard out.
Right.
And now they make it official. Touchdown.
And so, and that's right before the half, and the Bears take their first lead of the game.
Yep.
I think it's 10-7, right?
10-7.
So after a weird sort of on and off drive, finally.
Jumping off sides, but keep in mind he's a back.
Smart play by Calvin. He's trying to be funny.
And then he went ahead and went in motion parallel to the line of scrimmage.
Still should have been called, like you said.
Keith Ortigo's still around, 87.
Wow.
That was close.
Imagine that.
So
Tom that was close.
In for the score. Bears have the lead for the first time in the game. Harbaugh, the rookie quarterback, holding, and Butler to kick.
Once again, he didn't say Michigan this time.
You think he does it in case, like, you remind us, hey, it's a quarterback, in case maybe they're going to run a fake?
Because you don't see that anymore?
Because if you fake an extra point in 1987, and you score, you get a point.
No, but all holders are quarterbacks, and we've talked about this. That's a practice that's been abandoned entirely now.
Yeah.
It's gone 100% from quarterbacks to punters.
No, but my point was if you fake an extra point in 1987 and you convert, it's still 1 point.
Now, this is a point that I'm going to bring it up now because you might as well when you're watching this game. And it'll factor in the second half, even though this does turn out to be a little bit of a blowout. But I am really struck in retrospect after I don't know how many years the NFL has since they adopted the two-point conversion. But it is – I swear, I feel – and it's not a good or bad thing. It's probably good. It's actually a good thing, I think, because games are interesting to the end. It has had one of the more profound effects on – just the nature of each discrete game as far as when they're decided, I guess. As simple as that. You wouldn't think, shifting that 1 point, but the whole idea of 2-score, 3-score, it's like entirely different in this game, and you're going to see that as this game progresses.
Yeah, if you had an 11-point fourth quarter lead back
you're
then,
fucked. Yeah, you're secure. Yeah, you're done. That's 2 scores. It's 2 touchdowns is what it is.
Yeah. The ability to add 1 extra point just increases the different mathematical ways you can try to make up a deficit.
And it's weird. We lived through both eras. It never occurred to me until rewatching this game what an effect on the games that the 2-point conversion has had. And again, I'm all for it. I'm not saying it's good or bad. It definitely has, though, objectively.
So now you because you watched the full one. Now, one thing we haven't experienced on this is because it's been mainly showing scoring and mostly just the Bears have had the ball because Giants have done nothing on offense.
Right.
The man, the myth, Phil Sims, got knocked out in the first half, correct? And the great Jeff Rutledge came in to play quarterback for a series?
He got knocked out, and if I could find the point in the two-and-a-half-hour clip where it happens, it is so much in line with Wilbur's Marshall's hit on Joe Ferguson, like Todd Bell's hit on Joe Washington. It's a hit by Dent, and it's like – it's not just helmet to helmet, but it's like helmet to like the right side of the chin that isn't even protected, like coming up. And Phil Sims takes a fucking beating in this game that I don't think he actually took in the 85 playoff game. That game was freezing, and I'm sure he did. I'm sure if you watch, because every game we watch, here's the common thing. This is why we should be, and I'm sure you and I both are grateful that we lived through this and watched it. But if you ever go back and watch, and there are a lot of these games are largely in just full length. 85, really 84, about the halfway point, 84 playoffs, we did that. We did 3 games in 85, but you go to any game, 84, 85, 86, and really 87. And I forget how much even beyond 85 it goes. It's definitely 84, probably even more so. But it is definitely still a thing here, as you'll see in this home opener in 87, where regardless of how the game starts, eventually the defense will just keep coming and keep coming, and they will hurt the quarterback like in weird, uncomfortably looking ways, and another quarterback will invariably come into the game. It did not happen in the Montana game, but that Montana game that we did, the regular season game with Wayne Walker and Dick Stockton, was entertaining and fulfilling and satisfying. And that Montana was dropped, I think, 8 times. And even the great Joe Montana, once at least, just was probably absolutely fucking sick of the beer. So, and it's kind of spoiled us too, in a sense, because we were just kids, 12 or 13 years old, where you start seeing that, and you just start to expect that.
Yeah, your defense is always going to do that.
Quarterback drops back, and the fucking wall is going to close, and he's going to get hit and possibly hurt, and then throw in the cement parking lot that was painted green that Soldier Field was pointed out. And I want to point out, too, this is the last home opener in which they play on artificial turf. The announcers in the game do mention that they'd already announced that they're bringing in natural grass for the 88 season. So the whole combination here, some real just if you like violence and just collisions and just awesomeness and just athletes just running around at the highest levels and just hurting quarterbacks, you got it. And so important, Phil Sims. I got to give Phil Sims credit. I simultaneously understand when he says a lot of stupid shit on CBS, or I don't know, is he still on CBS?
Yeah, he's on the pregame show now. Not I mean,
for, from this game alone, he takes some hits that you wonder how he's even upright. And the fact that he comes back, I actually have a little – I grew some admiration for Sims because he's in and out of this game just like Mark Wilson and David Humwer in that 84 game. And he gets his bell rung. So if you watch the full game, it's entertaining, a little blurry because it's low-def 87.
I like the fact that – so he gets knocked out for one series. Rutledge comes in, and the Bears sack Jeff Rutledge. He's only in for three plays, and one of them's the sack.
It's just like you kind of expected too. Like he's this poor like kid in the wilderness that's coming. This is the 85 Bears defense. We actually have Todd Bell on this defense. Couple of caveats, by the way, in the full game that when they show the intros, you notice Gary Fencing is not in the starting lineup because they have Todd Bell is back, has been because he was the famous holdout. In 85, he's with Duerson as safeties, and Fencik, I thought, was he hurt? But everyone made a big to-do, justifiably so, about it being Peyton's last season. It was also Fencik's last season. Yeah. He does get in this game, but he's phasing himself out too. But Todd Bell is back, and Todd Bell does a few things in this game. So you're throwing on Todd Bell with Wilbur Marshall's another one where games that we've done, even the every 85 game, Wilbur is just more of a presence than I remember. Otis puts a lick on Sims. These are some of the greatest athletes that have ever come through this town.
When we wrap up at the end, I have a great quote from Otis to Phil Sims.
They were jawing in this game. There's some funny band, and it's one of the reasons I got respect for Sims.
Dr. Z knows one of the things that Otis told Phil. Which is pretty funny.
Can't wait to hear it.
Because I had to look it up to figure out. I was trying to place which injury was this that kept McMahon out. And the closest I could tell was this was still from the Charles Martin.
Charles show. Martin.
Yeah.
Confirmed. What a shame.
Okay, but yeah, Phil's back in. Yeah, Phil, I always thought he was overrated. But I don't think he should have ever got accused of not being tough.
Well, and the one thing they bring up that he did apparently have a stigma early in his career. He was a first round pick, I think, of the Giants.
Morehead State,
right? That
Emory Morehead State,
right? Exactly. That he was injury prone apparently early in his career, but that he'd actually put together a string of. So he's got pride on the line, but he's probably sick of hearing that shit. Yeah. He's like, "Fuck, I ain't afraid of these 85. I survived the game in 85." I think he takes more of a beating in this game than he did in the playoff game in 85.
He was also the. Well, according to the British guys, just 6 months earlier, he was Super Bowl MVP. Right. So,
22 of 25 in the Super Bowl. Yeah, these are we're almost halfway through with the video, so I don't feel I'm prattling on too much. It's all context, but and some of it's repetitive. We've brought it up before; it doesn't hurt to bring it up again. But just the notion that you've helped make me realize that it's even more pronounced of just how dominant the NFC was during this time. This is a clash of the fucking time. This is like two of the best teams at the time during one of the most dominant conferences during one of the most dominant eras. And so, it's just enjoyable beyond words. That's all I can say.
So we've already skipped halftime, and the Giants have the ball.
Oh, we missed more of an LT heart to heart.
Yeah,
that happened at halftime too. That's probably where they pulled that pregame. The British guys. From the halftime interview.
Yeah, because they didn't do much of a pregame on Monday Night Football. It was halftime was the way he stuck around for.
Exactly.
So Giants have the ball moving moving right to left on your podcast dial.
As Howard David might say.
Second and five. Morris again. And he comes up about a yard short of the
he's
first
fridge.
Down and pays a price
he's
at the
end. He's limber.
Terry and Marshall in there.
Another guy in that
D. Vesty Jackson is it.
Sure yeah, they talk him up early when they introduce him.
Guys, try to remember back how you started running the football
look at, this.
At the beginning of the game.
Meanwhile, Frank, you are down one more notch after that.
That's funny.
Life has been mean.
We're showing a stat that Joe Morris has passed Frank Gifford on the all-time Giants rushing.
Frank is now fourth.
I wonder what he is now.
Down and nine at the 43-yard line.
Tiki Barber's there.
Here's some excellent editing. So they must have showed that just so we could see the illustrious passing of the torch because now we've cut ahead to future action in the third quarter, and the Bears have the ball at the Giants 42. And they are lined up with two halfbacks, Walter Payton and Neil Anderson.
Right, 34 and 35. What do you get when you add 34 and 35, Andy?
It's a nice number.
It's a nice bet.
A quick goal quickly over Herb Welch. Pressure, contact, off balance, throws, and it's caught for a touchdown.
In his first NFL game.
So that a lot of exciting stuff here. This is Ron Morris from SMU.
Second round pick.
Son of Bears all-time leading receiver, Johnny Morris. I don't think he doesn't look much like Genie. So maybe
I'm not sure.
I don't know about the familial resemblance, but he's Johnny's kid, Ron. He would be best known, or at least what I always remembered him for, was in cold weather when he went to wear gloves. He wore like construction worker gloves. He wouldn't wear the tacky. Because apparently he wore those like in his workouts. He figured if he could catch the ball with those big gloves on, that when he took the gloves off, he could catch everything. But this is a pretty amazing play that he makes. It's a horrible decision by Mike Tomczak, who is still fading backwards, has basically both feet off the ground, and just globs the ball down the middle of the field. And who did they say the defensive back for the they're going to do a replay here in a second. But it's
is it Elvis off. Patterson? Elvis
no,
Patterson
Elvis gets Elvis runs into Willie here in a minute.
Well, Elvis said does a one thing I'm sure is not in here, which is hilarious, but go ahead. Sorry.
But it looks like it's going to be intercepted, and Ron literally just rips the ball out of his hands and runs in.
Was it Hilliard who ran back? Forget it.
They're going to show replay.
Mark Collins thought he had the interception.
Mark Collins.
Next thing you know, he's down, and the Bears lead by nine.
Did you see who came out to hug Tomczak?
Kevin Butler.
The kicker who runs out on the field to hug the quarterback before he goes to kick the extra point.
Okay.
I want to see Kyrie Irving start doing that. Why is he so selfish? Right. He won't go hug Justin Fields.
Thinking about himself.
And what did we say? Hands like flypaper.
That's
Mark
what you said.
Okay. I
didn't know Ron Morris had that reputation. Now, I was excited about Ron Morris because, you know.
Yeah, so Ron is not really, he's kind of open, but he's not open where Tomczak threw the ball.
Well, and sort of thrown,
yeah. But he just tears it out of Mark Collins.
In fact, he wouldn't have been open. If Tomczak put it on the spot, Mark Collins would have adjusted his coverage. Yeah.
Throw so bad, it was good. That's what they teach those Ohio State quarterbacks, apparently.
Yes. Yeah, undrafted free agent quarterback. Again, undrafted free agent quarterback with the Bears, that a team that has gone 29-3. It's previous 32 games.
So now the Bears are up 17-7, and a testament to how good the Giants' offense was that day. We now cut ahead to future play in the third quarter, and the Bears have the ball on their own 42-yard line.
And I'll just tell you, because there was a lot of this. It's not my imagination. In my memory, there's a lot of things I don't quite remember, but like watching this, it was pretty much, the Bears defense is at that point where they just keep storming the gates and Phil Simms is running for his life. Every now and then, Jeff Rutledge, who's the backup, goes in. He came in a few, Simms didn't just come into the game for the rest. It was just, it was kind of like, just almost like how in the Flintstones, Fred's walking down the wall, and you see the window, and you see a plant, and you see this, and then all of a sudden you see the same thing on a loop. I kind of feel like that's how it is, like with all these Bears games with the defense and the defenses on the field, 84, 85, 86, where it's just like eventually you're seeing the same thing, like the quarterback's running back, and then all of a sudden the wall surrounds. And so Simms is just getting his ass kicked. Just rest assured that whatever happened between Ron Morris's touchdown and all of a sudden the Bears having the ball at their own 44 is that Phil Simms got his ass kicked at least once, and the Bears got the ball back relatively quickly, because at one point the Bears were down 7-0 and now they're up 17-7.
And we paused here for a second so we could talk, and you can see, well, you can't, but we can see the Bears lined up. They're in the eye. Can you tell who the fullback is?
Is it Walter Payton?
It's Walter Payton is playing fullback.
Oh, he's an old man.
Neil Anderson is the tail of the tandem, as I'm sure Wayne Larrabee
was saying. Anderson does look good in this game, though. It's kind of exciting.
It's a great game.
Without disrespect to Walter, it's...
...takes over at its own 44-yard line. Tomczak is the perfect 6-of-6 in this half.
Exactly. This is Mike Tomczak's greatest quarter. You've got a man open, and he underthrows the world track athlete.
So Willie is open by a good 8 yards. And the throw hangs up so much the Giants catch up to it. Willie catches it, falls down, and literally just rolls into the end zone before he's touched for a touchdown.
Like Dick Van Dyke taught us as kids when we were on fire. You just get your ass down and roll. And that's what he did. He rolled into the end zone.
Look at times like, look what I did. Look what I did.
Yes. Ditka gives him a hug. Like, which is interesting because Ditka's Flutie was Ditka's guy. You always kind of feel like McMahon sort of engineered this whole sort of planting a flag around Tomczak because Tomczak was perfect at kissing McMahon's ass, and Jimmy liked that. So you've got Flutie, McMahon, Tomczak, and Harbaugh. You said at the beginning.
Now a shot of the crowd, and there's a bunch of cheerleaders. Who are the cheerleaders?
They're not the Giants
cheerleaders because they're excited. They are wearing white and blue, and they have great pom poms. I don't know who they are. They're not the
Patterson.
Elvis Patterson.
Yeah, Elvis got toasted there. That was his nickname. They brought up that Elvis's nickname was Toast. The funny thing about Elvis Patterson in this game is, like, we all remember him. That we lived there. They lived with Patterson. No one's going to keep up with Gall. Great
speed. On the replay, you can see that Elvis got burned so bad he stopped running.
Yeah.
And then the throw was so short that I think had Elvis kept running, he may have actually been able to play the ball.
There's something about Elvis Patterson. Like, everyone knew who he was, right? When you think Elvis Patterson, what's the first word you think of?
Yeah, Toast.
Everybody did. When I was a freshman at Northern, Ole can vouch for this. We played a pickup game, and I got burned, and then I'm named Toast. And then, like, Elvis Patterson, this is back in 1990. They talk about it. And so what's the deal? Why was he keep playing and stuff? And I don't know why. I think maybe he was a streaky player, but what's hilarious that at some point in this game, and I know it's early September, so it's kind of summery. This is a very warm night. It's part of the reason why I think the crowd is, it's a perfect cocktail, I think, for just exuberance. But at one point, Elvis is, like, laying on the field. He thinks he pulled a hammy. The training staff comes out. Everything stops. And they're, like, Body by Jake, like they're on the beach, like they're just like working him out. I'm like, Elvis, can't you get off the field? And then they like they get him to stand up, and then he hobbles. Oh, I got to put my arms around you. And then after a few steps, he's kind of walks off the field. And then like 3 minutes later, he's back out there. Like I think that happened before this play where he got burned by Willie Gault. Like he's like fucking like just taking his own sweet time because he might have tweaked his hammy. Everything about Elvis Patterson fascinates me. Just gonna say,
it's reminiscent of Carlos Santana in the World Series. Remember, he got hurt and he laid in the grass for like 15 minutes.
That's right.
And then he got up and he was fine. Well, of course he had rested. It's like, how long can he lay there? Can he lay there for all day?
Elvis,
we have to wait until tomorrow when Carlos is going to get up. We can resume the game.
And Elvis did have to leave the field for a play because he didn't
have his
burns
treated.
Yeah. Right. So, Elvis Toast Patterson totally burned on this underthrow by Mike Tomczak that Gault readjusted to and caught. So, cheers. Bears up 24-7 all of a sudden.
And more than that, he has gained a lot of finesse. Coming off
Olympic class hurdler. That's not right, is it?
When Olympic class hurdler.
Wasn't Ronaldo Nehemiah the hurdler?
Yeah. Well, and the other thing he said that he's adopted finesse. Like, no, finesse is the one thing he's always had as a football player.
He would have had to have adopted some grit, not finesse.
Right. And it's not a knock. I used to sometimes be hard on Willie in retrospect that his contributions are appreciated. But I don't want to say soft.
You can see my cursor, so I can circle stuff. So here's, I don't know if you know this.
Is that rookie quarterback out of Michigan, Jim Harbaugh?
First round rookie quarterback out of Michigan, Jim Harbaugh. And right next behind him, what do we got here? We got it. Oh, it's a towel again.
Putting a towel. Towel again.
Trenton Gill's like, I watched the 87 Bears Giants. I thought I could bring a towel up.
5 years of a year ago. Mike Tomczak in 7 starts last year and a couple of mop up roles. As Butler kicks the extra point.
Right. Tomczak had like an undefeated record coming into this game. Of course he did.
He's got 2 now in the last few minutes.
Okay. And I just have to like talk about how crazy it is. Tomczak had like a 6-0 record. And I saw this. It was 6-0 record coming into this game. 2 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. It might have been more now that I think about it. God, I got to look that up now. They said it in the broadcast, or they showed it. And the other thing was, I mentioned earlier, he was 9 of 21 in the first day. He was terrible. The third quarter in this game is like the Mike – it's like the Ryan Sandberg game for Mike Tomczyk. He was incredible. He made, like, some really good pass. I mean, the Ron Moore – actually, both touchdown passes were unimpressive. But he did actually, like, move the ball. And it's like – I think – you and I, you still haven't really watched this game since like it first aired, and I did, and a lot of things I forgot. I think a lot of us generally remember like it was like this exciting game. It was like a weird, unexpected Mike Tomczyk game. And when I was watching it in the first half, I'm like, how is this the Mike Tomczyk game? He's fucking terrible. He's 9 of 20. The third quarter, he was, I think he was 8 of 8. At one point, he was nine consecutive passes. He was like 9 of 9, and we saw 2 big touchdowns. So he racked up the yards. So at the end of the game, I can just tell it now because I already alluded to it earlier when it said that Jim McMahon on the road on a Monday night game would finally have a 300-yard game himself. But Tomczyk finished with 292 yards in this game. It's just nuts. Just a nuts stat line. Even with the – he had 2 interceptions. One was horrible. But it just boils down to basically the third quarter. He had like this ridiculous third quarter that made his numbers look good, and it probably is the reason why he was able to quarterback for Pittsburgh as late as 1995, is feeding off that third quarter for all those years.
He started 5 games for the Steelers in 1999.
Jesus Christ, I undersold it.
96 was the year he went 10-5. They went to the playoffs. In 86, he started 7 games. The Bears were 7-0. 2 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. In this year, 1987, he starts 6 games. He goes 4-2. He throws 5 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. So at one point 7 in his career, he was 11-2, and he'd thrown 7 touchdowns and 20 interceptions.
Very nearly a 3-to-1 interception to touchdown ratio.
88, he got it all together. 5 starts, 4-1, 6 touchdowns. 7 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. Finally, 3 touchdowns, interceptions.
He was on the right side of it. Yeah, you know, it's amazing that the team was so built on defense and then running, and then they required a halfway decent upright operational quarterback.
With the Bears and for his career,
even without that,
he was 21-10. He threw 33 touchdowns and 47 interceptions.
You remember the stat quarterback wins? How you can think he might be able to use that?
Oh, yeah, they would put it up, and then for a long time, even after he was gone, they would put like all time quarterback records, you know, win loss records, and he would always be way up there. It's like, yeah, but he didn't do shit.
You want to talk about someone just riding the wave of just an immense force again, a historic defense, and again, the fact that Mike Tomczyk had that record is proof that you plug anybody in a quarterback and you're going to be competitive. If you only had a really good quarterback, then we'd be talking a different tale.
So it's 24-7 in the third. This one's over. You don't have to worry about it. There's nothing the Giants can do. Giants can't move the ball on offense at all.
Plus, no 2-point conversion.
But here we go. Now, further action in the third quarter. Again, the Bears have the ball at the Giants 45.
Right. We can just assume that Phil Simms is taking at least 1 or 2 more, like, you know, blows to the head.
Tomczyk. Just blindly chucks it down the field. Yeah. Oh, it's intercepted.
Exactly. This is like Harbaugh 92. This is like,
look at Jim Colbert running it down.
Freshman in the Super Bowl. Yeah. Goddamn, Jim Colbert.
Terry Kinnard runs it all the way back for a touchdown. And now the Giants have scored on special teams and on defense. And it's 24-14.
Sure. Yeah, and the announcers do point out, by the way, that at this point in the game, the Giants' offense, the defending Super Bowl champion Giants, have not scored a touchdown against the Bears on offense.
They've gone at least 7 straight quarters.
He comes in right in Mike Tomczak's face and forces a bad throw, Frank. You'll see it right here.
LT finally does something against the Bears.
Jumbo tried to hold it, but couldn't even hold it. Covering receiver and down the sideline. But they just talked about how it's like the first time LT had done anything all night. Reconstruction
of the knee. Yeah, they kept him quiet, no doubt, dude. He's the reigning fucking MVP.
And The Bears block the extra point. So there goes the
ball. Who blocks it?
24-13.
Could be very, very important.
Blocked by the other Super Bowl holdout.
Yes. Exactly.
They show Hampton celebrating, so you think he did it. But it was Al Harris, good old number 90.
Instead, it was Hampton's fellow first-round draft pick from 1979. God, this team was so loaded with talent, this defense. So loaded with talent, it's ridiculous.
And he blocks it, and Todd Bell almost recovered it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There's nowhere for Todd to run.
See, I swear, if you watch the full game, the fans audibly laugh whenever Sean Lindetta comes out of it. I swear, I'm not imagining that.
So now we've got the we're in the fourth quarter now because the Giants are going the opposite direction, and the whiffer Sean Landetta is in to punt. The Giants are
on
the
65,000 fans are all laughing at him, making his sphincter tight.
And
the Giants, who haven't scored against the Bears now in seven consecutive quarters,
we already pointed that out, Dan.
Their offense hasn't scored on fourth down.
Thanks, Al.
The punt fielded by
fun facts coming up.
Run back for Dennis McKinnon. Out to the 40 and still going. To the 40, to the 30, and McKinnon's going to go all the way. Beautiful.
Frank sounds like he's ready to go home, Frank.
I remembered that he ran a punt back for a touchdown. I remember it was a long one. I did not remember that. It's one of the greatest punt returns in Bears history. It's a ridiculous punt return. There are twice where three Giants have him, and he gets away from them the whole time.
He spins around on that first one, sort of. He also he does that perfect cut up the middle after the first left right. So he does. He's going to get 25 yards. So I don't either. So I talked earlier about
yards,
like right. So they talk about
do you get penalized for fielding for returning a punt inside the 10? Remember Johnny Bailey's 95-yard touchdown?
No.
Bears fined.
I watched this whole game. They did. The announcer, they're all ex-footballers, so they should mention it in spite of them being shitty announcers. Not Al, but like certainly Deardorff and Frank's old and addled. But they had the presence of mind to joke about, after the fact, about what do you think Ditka, would say, about him fielding a punt at the 6. And they also point out that it set a new Bear record for the longest punt return at 94 yards, which dated back to the 40s. They mention it. I can't remember. But I immediately thought, I immediately thought of fucking Johnny Bailey. So poor old Dennis McKinnon's record only lasted for 3 seasons because Johnny Bailey, with Mike Ditka as coach, then it was a 95-yarder against the Chiefs at the very end of the season in 1990. And because we're on the topic, I just want to anytime we'll cover a game like this, just want to give props to Dennis McKinnon. I would not have guessed that Silky D was still on the 87 Bears. He was always the guy that if you consider yourself a real football fan, you would identify him as a real wide receiver. No offense to Willie. Willie stretched the offense and his track skills help. But McKinnon was the guy that ended a guy's career with a block. He was a guy that would go over the middle. He was the guy who would fucking return punts. And this is not his only NFL return punt. There's another YouTube game from 83 in Lambeau, a crazy-ass game where McKinnon ran back a punt. And it was nice to see that, again, so many features of this 87 Bears team is still very much the 85 Bears. And in that time that we lived through it, we are very much of that mindset. So it's very rewarding to see McKinnon get a franchise record after all the hard work he'd put in for 5 or 6 years. And, of course, only to see that record get eliminated by one-year wonder Johnny Bailey 3 years later. And at this point now, it's 31-7. The Bears are like humiliating the goddamn Super Bowl champion. 13, sorry. Yeah, they missed the extra point. I'm sorry. Then
So when did McKinnon get – when did he get hurt? Did he get hurt in the preseason in 86? He didn't play at all in 86.
They referenced that he was coming back from injury. He didn't play in 86. It must have been early in the season because, he didn't get hurt in the Super Bowl. Right? He played in the Super Bowl. Right? Yeah, he caught 2 touchdowns against the Giants in the playoff game.
He played in the Super Bowl, but then he didn't play at all in 86.
At all.
And in 87 was kind of like his rehab year because he didn't start a single game, but then he started 15 of the 16 games in 88 and actually had his best year as a Bear. He caught 45 passes for 704 yards, averaged 15 yards a catch, 3 touchdowns. And before that, for the Bears, his career high had been 31 catches in 85.
Nuts.
Wow.
He played 89 with the Bears, and he played 9 games for the Cowboys in 90, and then his career was over.
Okay.
He only played 7 years.
Tip of the hat to Silky D, then. I would not have guessed that, and it's shame on me, because I always try to appreciate him for just being an all-around football player at a wide receiver position, which he really was.
So the fans in the stands are going wild with ecstasy.
The fans are lubed. I mean, it's a Nike. They've been tailgating. It's warm weather.
The wide receiver and punt returner.
Bill Parcells pulling his pants up.
Goes 93 yards.
Oh, 93. No, they credit him after catching it.
They corrected it. They said later it's 94.
So the first time, three guys almost have it, including Zeke Mowat.
Talk about leg strength.
He gets that. Actually, that was the second time. The first time, three guys converge before he even gets free. Then another three guys.
Yeah.
And then I was surprised, considering that, you know, he was not, he was fast, but not like the fastest guy.
No. Gall was the fast guy. He was the
He blew past the Giants.
He did. He did. There was some little, like, halfback safety that was, like, had a line on him, and he outran him.
Yeah, because Reggie Phillips was going to go block that guy. And then didn't need to. Because,
right,
Dennis was already gone. Yeah, he was clear.
He fucking turned on the Jets.
So now we have the Giants have the ball. They finally made it into Bear territory. Probably just a bunch of penalties.
I can't remember now.
So they have the ball at the Bear.
I mean, again,
33.
Kudos to Sims for just fucking still being out there.
OJ Anderson is in at halfback.
He's got to So another guy out there, by the way, real quick. I don't think it comes up in this edited version. Tony Galbraith, who I remember as like the erstwhile sort of companion to Archie Manning, Peyton, and Cooper's dad of the Saints, like good players on a shitty Saints team that, you know, and they bring up the fact, by the way, that the Saints, which would have been Jim Morris' first game, I think, won the day before, and that they even tell us, even it's week one, that the Saints have never had a winning season. I think 87 they would. But anyway, Tony Galbraith was the long-suffering running back for the Saints, and he's in this game. I think he may have played in the Super Bowl for the Giants too. What's interesting is that Galbraith was a prolific receiver of passes out of the backfield, as you know Walter Payton was too. So what's interesting is that in this game, they bring it up. I don't know if you'll see it in this excised version, but they bring up that Payton has 106 touchdowns, which tied him for Jim Brown, 106 rushing. He was like 4 or 5 behind Brown combined touchdowns, rushing, receiving, and that he was like 4 receptions behind Tony Galbraith, who at this moment was now like the oldest running back in the NFL, and just getting, and he gets some plays in this game is for running receptions by running backs all time. I'm pretty sure that it had to be close, because this is Peyton's last season. So it kind of pissed me off if Tony Galbraith, and you know, and I feel like Roger Craig probably passed them both anyway a few years later, but just pointing that out, that I don't know who remembers Tony Galbraith, but he is in this game and he does catch a couple passes, and he's one of the last milestones that Peyton is still trying to sort of secure as he rides off into the sunset. Enough of that. We could probably look that up actually, right? Because I mean, Galbraith was like borderline useless, although he gets in this, and he's older than Peyton. You know, like Peyton's already a freak of nature. And, yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's funny. We've looked this up before. So the Johnny Morris is the all-time leader in receiving yards for the Bears.
But Peyton is still the all-time leader
Peyton
in receptions?
Peyton is the all-time leader in receptions. And second is Matt Forte.
Yeah.
And he's only 5 behind. Had he played his last year with the Jets, had he played his last year with the Bears, he would be the all-time leader in receptions for the Bears.
So he finished with more than Peyton in his career, but less as a Bear?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. And how many receptions did he have?
Well, Peyton had 492 and Forte had 487.
Perfect. You know how many Tony Galbraith finished with? He actually had 20. This was his final season, 87. Galbraith's career began in 76, but he may have still been older than Peyton, because, as we pointed out, Peyton was a young rookie in 75. So, yeah, I mean, Galbraith was 22 in 76, almost identical age, and had a nice career, had no 1,000-yard seasons because the Saints suck, but he caught 26 passes out of the backfield for the 87 Giants and finished with 490, 2 behind Sweetness.
Sweetness pass.
And never played again. So I can rest easy now.
Walter caught his 492 in 13 seasons. Forte caught 487 in 8. Of course, he caught 100 one year for the Bears.
So it's probably safe to... Forte did?
Yeah.
Fuck. It's nuts. In Martz's offense? Or somebody...
Mark Trestman.
Wait. So wait.
He caught 100 in 2014. He caught 102 passes for 808 yards.
So there's no way that Peyton is still the all-time leading running back, leader in receptions for a running back.
No,
I'm sure several guys passed them off. Yeah, Roger Craig may have himself because Craig was emerging as like this weird. Okay, well I'm glad we set that straight. At least Tony Galbraith did not retire as the all-time leading. All-time leader in receptions for running backs or out of the running back position. The funny thing is, too, when they mentioned it in this game, because in the first quarter, Galbraith catches a backwards lateral, and then they go on about how he's going to pass Peyton, and then eventually Frank has to bring up the fact that that play we just saw that prompted this discussion does not count towards the receptions.
Let's see if we can
actually run from scrimmage.
A quick look here at the all-time reception leaders. Let's see where we get our first running back. Let's see. This is exciting for the listeners. Antonio Gates, Derek Mason, Art Monk.
If you guys can find a better way.
The all-time leader is, I mean, for running backs is Marshall Faulk. 767, like 200, almost 300 more than Walter had. 370
makes me believe that Forte got a lot of those yards under Martz, and I'm just gonna lazily assume that that was the common thread. Marshall Faulk, wow, I believe it. Yeah, the game's evolved. So Peyton got passed by, but Peyton did retire as the all-time leader, two ahead of Tony Galbraith, 1987 Giant.
Let's see, Walter is. Yeah, there's Tony Galbraith, 490. Walter, I don't know what I don't know where he is with running backs because I can't sort by.
But overall,
he's overall all time. He has 177th most receptions in NFL history.
Okay,
he's ahead of guys like Tony Galbraith, Drew Pearson, Don Hutson.
Wow,
up yours, wow. Fans.
Take
Anthony
that,
Carter.
Hudson. I like the Don Hutson. AC
Adam Thielen.
Anthony Carter was in
the He's
Bears
just Viking. Behind. Oh, he should have stuck around for one more game. He's three behind Ahmad Rashad.
Ooh, Bobby Moore still couldn't do it. All right.
Allen Robinson has more career catches than Walter Payton. Of course, he's a wide receiver, and he's supposed to catch lots, and he hasn't lately.
Yeah. All right.
So the Giants have the ball on the Bears 33, it looks like.
And Otis Anderson was prompted by Tony Galbraith. The Giants were pretty good about recycling running backs from other teams because Otis Anderson was a longtime Cardinal.
Well, and I would guess part of the reason Otis is in now is they probably got tired of watching little Joe Morris try to block Wilbur and Otis.
That's totally true.
The Giants have to go for it on fourth and six.
Oh, fourth and six.
In the game with 10 minutes
to
play.
Look at it.
Oh,
good for you, Phil.
Mark Bavar wide open. Notre Dame on Notre Dame crime. Dave Dorson shoves him out of bounds at the three.
Giants also had Eric Dorsey on the defensive line.
Now, I noticed this when I watched this the first time. They're going to show a replay here. And Otis blitzes. And he does get picked up by one of the running backs. And Dan circles the wrong guy. He circles Singletary.
Right.
Singletary is, I'm sure he's supposed to have Mark Bavaro. And he just stands in the middle of the field and lets him go. Whoops!
He does. That's right.
Invoking his Hall of Fame membership for that one.
Singletary, I think, had like a great start to his career, like a 3-year peak, but he kind of started.
Now
he might have been starting to fall off here.
So now it's like first and goal. They're probably at the 5. And Reggie Phillips is about to have quite a sequence here.
You mean Super Bowl hero Reggie Phillips?
Phil drops back. There's a guy over the middle. That's incomplete. No big deal.
That's Fessy Jackson.
No, next play here.
9:48 to go. Chicago up by 18.
A throw. Right off Reggie's hands in the end zone.
It's
like, oh, he could have had a catch.
Did you see who that pass was intended for?
It was intended for Stacey Robinson.
future NIU quarterback.
He must have had eligibility.
308 yards against Fresno State when Trent Dilfer
played wide receiver for the Giants and then went back to Northern to play quarterback.
Exactly. And then years after that, got busted for stealing a stereo in his hometown of Danville. Anyway.
So here's Phil now again.
Manuel gets taken down at the line of scrimmage.
Oh, there's right off Reggie's hands again. Reggie dropped the interceptions in the end zone.
But Reggie's like, it's not the Super Bowl. I already scored
a touchdown on the Super Bowl.
He's got a touchdown on the Super Bowl. Walter Payton did not score a touchdown on the Super Bowl. Reggie Phillips did.
The New York Giants have the football.
Again, where are they from?
We get random cheerleaders, so we don't know where they're from.
Exactly.
And that's it's quite the hair they all got in 1987.
Yeah, those are not high school cheerleaders, I don't think, either.
That's got to be a college. Maybe they're the Eastern Illinois University cheerleaders.
Like faculty? Imparting that wisdom to Sims. We didn't despise Bill Parcells like Bill Walsh, but I'm enjoying this now.
Yeah. The fourth down.
Again, we didn't really cross paths with the time. He looks toward
Robinson. He throws for Stacy. Oh, there it is. Stacy catches the touchdown.
The
right
first
over Vesti.
The first Giants touchdown against the Bears since like the Ford administration. We get some British narration.
Yeah, they're just going to summarize. They ran out of time.
In case you don't know, they call it football. They
show a sack, one of the eight sacks they had on Phil Sims that day.
There are some violent ones. If you want some violence, kids, look at
the Kevin Butler field goal to round out the score. And there's a victorious Mike Tomczak.
Yes, it was incredible. It was all downhill from that, although he managed to milk it for another 12 years, incredibly. I can't believe Tomczak made it to 99. Like I said, I enjoyed it when I watched the whole 2.5 hours of that thing and realized that the Bears were still in that sweet spot. Even at the time, it wasn't like we were disillusioned. Like, oh, we're convincing ourselves. They were fucking good. The strike hit a few weeks later, and a lot of things started to happen, but nobody in their right mind would have been writing off that Bears team. Nobody knew anything then that would have indicated that they knew what they're talking about if they said the Bears weren't good. They were very much one of the very best teams in the league, and they had been for a few years.
So the Sports Illustrated article the next week was titled "Grin and Bear It, Giants" by Paul Zimmerman, Dr. Z. It starts out, "Maybe next time it will be different. Maybe next time the New York Giants will have figured out the Chicago Bears' wildly effective blitzing scheme, which knocked the Giants quarterback Phil Sims into dreamland, destroyed their passing game, and eliminated the running attack from their game plan. The final score of what was billed as Super Bowl 21.5, the September Classic, or simply the greatest Monday night matchup in history, it was 34-19, but it was misleading. The Giants' defense scored a touchdown, special teams got another off a blocked punt. Their offense finally scored. Probably got the board in the fourth quarter when the game was all but lost."
Yep.
So looking through this stuff there, he writes about the weirdest stuff. Like,
Dr. Z.
The Bears issued 750 press credentials for the game, turned down 350 more. The Sun-Times.
Do you think, did Pat Benkowski get in, you think?
Yes, he did. He got press credential number one. Yeah. Him on the ground. 1987. The Sun-Times Sunday supplement ran 76 pages on the Bears.
Oh, sure.
In addition to the paper's regular sports section.
Oh, the Sunday papers were huge in the Bears' heyday, believe me.
It's going to be a game that you'll say when you're 50 or 60 years old, "Hey, I played in one of the biggest games in NFL history," said Chicago quarterback Mike Tomczak.
Oh, of course he was. The greatest. It's the game that pretty much gives him his pension. He was incredible for one quarter. I mean, when I rewatched it, I was like, I mean, he wasn't even that incredible. He's just productive and fortunate. And the fact that he was their starting quarterback is such an indictment.
Dan Hampton's quote, "Phil Sims is a great quarterback, but put enough pressure on and they all look like Arch Sleister."
Come on, Dan. What a shot.
Going with the Jeep shot.
What a low blow. at this point, Hampton's kind of on the other side of the hill. I think a lot of the defense is still peaks that Dent's at his peak. Wilbur's at his peak. Otis is still at his peak. Singletary had a shorter peak, I think. He came on strong as a rookie. And then Hampton now. McMichael is at his peak for sure. I continuously think I've underrated McMichael through the years. But, yeah.
So you're talking about how you could see on the full video Otis jawing at Phil Simms.
So at one point, he delivers one of the many, like, not late hits, but just rough hits that probably would be flagged today. But at another point in the game, he hits him again. But another one, Simms, like, throws an interception back – or interception, incomplete pass, backing out of the – like, in the end zone. And Otis, like, starts to, like, talk shit. And then Simms just comes right back and does this, which, you know, he, like, show – the announcers had fun with it, and I kind of admit that, like, at least, you know, he was kind of, like, just saying, like, yeah, fuck you, whatever, you're going to kick my ass, I'm going to pretend I'm as crazy as you are, or something. I don't know, even know what it was, but, you know, it kind of endeared me to Simms, to be honest.
Otis got
asked
what he said to Phil, and he said, I told him, when we were at the Pro Bowl, your son took my kid's truck. You give it back.
Oh!
He's trying to get a toy truck returned.
Imagine bringing that up after you, like, drop a guy in his head in the game. Wow. That's great.
So, let's take a look here. The Bears only had three more first downs than the Giants. They had 17, Giants had 14. Of course, when you score on a couple of long plays and a return punt for a touchdown, you don't need as many first downs.
Yeah, kind of. It's an odd game statistically because Tomczak ended up with, like, ridiculous numbers that probably, like, arguably the best line of his career, even with the two interceptions.
Giants quarterbacks were sacked 9 times. The Bears quarterbacks were not sacked.
So that's another point about this game, is that I've been talking about the defense and how much this era that was, like, was hoisted up by the defense. But even the offense was exceptional in the Super Bowl. They were, when they had a healthy quarterback, they had functioning receivers. But the offensive fucking line in this game is it is a goddamn clinic. They dominate. I mean, some of the greatest players. The announcers are talking up Chip Banks a lot, like he's going to be right behind LT, and that's not true. In fact, Wilbur Marshall was a better player than Chip Banks, and I think that was proven. But the Giants were goddamn good, obviously. Again, this is a clash of the Titans. And they were starting a second-year player on the line, Eric Dorsey, who proved they had a decent career, old Notre Damer, but they still had Leonard Marshall, Jim Burt, you know, who fucking knocked out Joe May. The Giants did things to the 49ers that, like, the Bears did to everybody but the 49ers. They would fuck them up. But they had great defensive players, and they were silenced. And so I think a thing that needs to get mentioned is that line with now, because at this point Thayer has been a second year full time. It has been steady, healthy. Hilgenberg, Bortz, Thayer, Van Horn, Covert, and Covert was the guy tasked with LT. Granted, they didn't face each other a lot, but in the playoff game in 85 and in this game, almost on that alone, if Lawrence Taylor is as great of a player as everyone says he is, and I think he might be revolutionary and trends, you know, shattering the mold, you could almost make the case for Jimbo Culver just based on these games, because you hardly hear LT.
A big part of why he got inducted in the Hall of Fame.
He did get inducted, right? Dan Pompey's mission did eventually pay off? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I guess it probably should. He got his career was cut short by injury. Blocked from Marino. He was great. He was just a great it's such an important position, right tackle. Left tackle.
Left tackle.
Wherever the fuck LT was.
Yeah. Well, and if you could have one guy who could who could block LT by himself at least most of the time, then everybody else could. I mean, part of the reason the Giants' defense would feast on teams is they're putting 2 and 3 guys on LT, and if you didn't have to do that, the other players weren't nearly as good when they were actually getting blocked.
Well, what made the Bears so great was that Dan Hampton would take on those double teams, which was, you know, accentuated Singletary's, you know, advantages and Richard Dent's, like, and to not have to double team LT, just that in and of itself, and still neutralize them, right? To, like, it could be one thing to choose not to double team him and then live with the expected law. You've already calculated, you know, whatever damage he's going to do, but fucking one guy neutralized that motherfucker. So
Cheers to Jimbo.
So Phil Simms was 15 of 28 for 181 yards and a touchdown. That bullshit fourth down one to Stacey Robinson.
Right.
Mike Tomczak, 20 of 34 for 292 yards, two touchdowns, and two interceptions.
Just no. Even in its time, just an insane night. Like I said, Bears quarterbacks never approach 300 yards. We always hope McMahon when he did it once, but here comes the undrafted local Cal City Mike Tomczak in his eighth NFL start against the defending NFL Super Bowl champion, who had a defense that, like we said, was pretty damn good. Put up those numbers.
Walter carried 18 times for 42 yards.
It was sad. Three passes for 12. 2.2. Yeah.
Neil Anderson ran 13 times for 62 yards and caught six passes for 81 yards, including a 47-yard reception early in the game.
Neil carried on that tradition from Walter about just being a really good handsy halfback out of the backfield, catching passes. That was a nice, not exactly Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, but pretty nice run for running backs there, I guess, for us. Kind of like how we are with Cubs first basemen. But
well, yeah, from 1975 until 1993, they had.
Yeah, and then Forte is not that long. It's only a 15-year break, and then we get another guy that's really up there.
What about Rashawn Salaam and Curtis Enos?
Well, and I didn't want to say this. Tim Worley. It seems so disrespectful, but like a couple times I'm watching Peyton this game thinking, oh my God, it's like shades of the 1994 Lewis Tillman. Which feels so wrong to even think, let alone say a lot on a podcast.
Yeah, Neil would only play 8 years.
Yeah, his peak was what, 89, 90, 91, or 90, 91, 92? There's three 1,000-yard seasons.
88 to 90.
Well, that's it. Yeah, started the year after Walter retired.
And the play I always remember him for wasn't even I remember a few things I remember about Neil Anderson. Number one, he wore his helmet like too high, and he was like looking through the bottom of his face mask all the time.
Oh yeah.
And we had a guy on our team in high school who wore his helmet the same way, when I was joked about that, you know, you're gonna get hit in the chin and just break it.
Right.
The Bears had, I'm pretty sure it was against Tampa. Harbaugh probably threw an interception, and deep in, like, all Bears were going in for a touchdown. Harbaugh throws an interception. Guy from the Bucks takes off up the left sidelines, and Neil, who had run like an out and was in the opposite corner of the end zone, ran on a diagonal all the way down the field and tackled him and kept him from scoring a touchdown. It was just amazing just to see him. Like, he's not even in the picture. You're watching the guy run down the sidelines, and all of a sudden you see Neil, like, show up in the corner of your TV at an angle, and he just glides across the field and tackles the guy before he can score a touchdown. He must have run, like, considering he also ran a route. He ran over 100 yards probably on the play and ran the guy down.
Yeah, he always seemed like faster than Walter ever was. You know, I mean, it's unfair. It's one of those things too. It's probably a little unfair. He had some pressure coming after, but even I do remember in 87.
Well, he had some pressure replacing the greatest football player of all time. There's a little pressure, but
there was like some tension. Like it was a sensitive situation. You know, like, well, not unlike when Sean Dunstan was trying to be shortstop and learn not to.
That's the same. Walter Payton, Larry Boa, Sean Dunstan, Neil Anderson. That's a perfect comparison.
No, but like, Payton would not be a dick, even though Payton was always a little upset about the Super Bowl, and like, it was probably beneath him to like let people know how upset he was. It was not like a thing. Like, he knew he was done, but like, it had to be a little bit of a tough thing for Neil. You know, like, shit. Like, it's kind of like, you know. Just kind of walking on eggshells. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, Peyton was so iconic.
And given what we know now, and it wasn't that much different back then, you don't replace your running back while you still have him.
But what were they going to do? He was a freak of nature. Like, but how, like, do you,
when
just
Walter,
like,
retires, the next year you go out and you get your running back. You don't need.
You're right.
They didn't need to groom Neil for 2 years behind Walter. They wasted 2 years of Neil's career, and they, you know, they were. They created an uncomfortable situation for them.
Well, and like, Peyton was still productive in 86. The only 87 was the statistical drop off.
Yeah, and part of that, I'm sure, doesn't help when you're, you know, in your final year and you end up having to take a month off because there's a strike.
There's that too.
And maybe you're already, like, your fullback is gone because your head coach has decided he's just going to play both running backs at the same time. And you're going to play fullback sometimes. And because you can. I mean, that was the reason they could do it. I mean, Walter, he could have been the greatest fullback of all time if he wanted. There's nothing he loved better than just lighting dudes up trying to blitz this quarterback. And
it happens. It does happen in this game. As much as I point out that, like, and again, like, it's sad, but it's not like Willie Mays, like, in the 73 World Series sad. I mean, he's contributing. He's playing fucking football. But there is a point in the fourth quarter when the Bears have the game in hand. They gave Peyton a lot of yards at the end of this game, by the way. If you watch the full version, he actually gets a lot of action because I think – you know, Ditka's trying to, like, get him, you know, just rack up his yards, right? But there's one point where they're trying to wind the clock down, and Peyton does not go out of bounds only because, but he, you know, you don't want to go out of bounds. And Anderson knew that because on one play, Anderson kind of, like, rounded the outside of end and then kind of went down. But Peyton ran wide, and then in vintage, like, peak Peyton just went upfield. I forget the Giant defender. There are two guys that were on him, but he just rammed into the guy. You know, and this is like 35-year-old Walter Payton at the, you know, end of his career. That is like, he did not want to go out of bounds. Unfortunately, he'd gotten too close to the sideline where he got pushed, but he not before delivering an absolute fucking hit and like a kind of a helmet and also just a stiff arm to a Giants defender. And the guy Payton, you can see, you know, he didn't get hurt, but he definitely felt the blow.
So. Well, it's funny. So if you count, you know, the fact that the strike interrupted his last season. His last four full seasons in the NFL, he rushed for 1,421 yards, 1,684 yards, 1,551 yards, and 1,333 yards.
Whoa.
That's what he ran for in 86. And wow. Even in, so his carries went way down. He carried the ball less than half as many times.
Because they had a real offense.
And he ran for 533 yards in 87. Which is only – it's his lowest average he had since 81. He only averaged 3.6 yards. That was a
– strike – oh, no, not strike.
No, that wasn't a strike season. That was a – the Bears offensive line is
awful.
That was break four tackles to get to the line of scrimmage and then see what you can do with the rest of it, Walter.
That's true. That's actually a doubt. That's actually a nadir in the Bears franchise.
Yeah, because that's what gets the astronaut fired, and Ditka comes in.
And they drafted Van Horn in 81. He wasn't ready, but help was on the way. And it was done. We've talked about it before. It was nice to see Peyton get all those yards in 80. Like you said, 1,580. It's ridiculous. That's a lot of yards. And the guy's like 33. And it always felt like less painful. Like he got like in 77, he was the MVP with like 1,800 yards, but he had taken a beating. Granted, he was younger and he was, you know, 8 years older in 85, but like it was like he got to sort of coast because he would never, he was too proud. He would always deliver hits himself, but it just seemed like he would get to 1,500 yards a lot easier in 85 than he would have in 77.
In 85, he finished second in the MVP balloting.
Behind who won the MVP in 85?
Marcus Allen.
Wait. Oh, because it's an NFL thing. That's nuts. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Marcus Allen ran for, well, Walter had 1,551 yards. Marcus ran for 1,759.
Yeah, but for the Walter Raiders. Was 10 fucking years older than Marcus Allen.
He finished third in 83. He finished third in MVP voting. Let's see.
Okay.
Yeah, Dan Marino. God, was Marino really the MVP? I mean, did he have that good a year in 84?
He was a rookie.
This is all he did. He only threw for 5,084 yards and 48 touchdowns. Is that
in 83 or 84? 84 you're talking about.
Yeah. 84.
So Peyton was third in 84 and second in 85?
He finished third behind Eric Dickerson. Okay, so how about this? Eric Dickerson ran for 2,105 yards and was an MVP because Dan Marino threw for 5,000 yards and 48 touchdowns. And then Walter ran for 1,684 yards and finished third. And they were the only three guys who got MVP votes.
Dude, that's nuts that that all happened in the same season that Marino set the passing mark the same year that – the passing touchdown mark the same year that Dickerson set the rushing mark. Like, I always knew those two things happened and never quite realized how
– I never realized they happened at the same year.
Well, I mean, we had to have because we lived through it.
Well, looking back, it's those – they seem to exist on their own. Like
right, it seems crazy.
One guy had one year, another guy had another. We didn't realize they were the same year.
And then like in different parts of an offense.
So then Dickerson probably was never MVP, I would guess. If he didn't win it that year, I can't imagine he ever won it.
Nope. Nope. MVP is hard because A, it's the entire NFL. Yeah. And then B, it's like football is so weird. Cool. Like I said, if you're a defensive player, unless you're Lawrence Taylor or Alan Page, it's kind of hard to be an MVP. It's very football, or I'm sorry, it's very offensive biased.
Dickerson finished second in the MVP voting 3 times.
Wow.
In 83, he finished behind Joe Theismann.
Joe Theismann won an MVP, but so did Mark Mosley. So both Redskins MVPs are ridiculous.
And then he finished behind Marino. And then in 86, he finished behind, Lawrence Taylor. Only the second defensive player ever to win MVP.
And to this day, still the only second.
I'd say Dickerson got screwed twice.
He did. Just circumstance. It's not like he got. Well, I got no problem with LT. LT was a freak. I mean, jokes aside about not being really a linebacker, the guy was a freak in nature.
He's a great player.
He revolutionized the position, But losing out to Theismann won the MVP in 83.
Yeah, that seems ridiculous.
That's a sentimental vote, and maybe Peyton getting all those votes in 85 was sentimental, but at least Peyton still racked up 1,500 yards. Theismann in 83 was like 2 years from getting his ankle snapped, and he was an old guy anyway. It's like his old end of his career, in Mosley. Man, what's with the – that had to be like some George Well Beltway media shit, getting Mark Mosley and Joe Theismann back-to-back MVP.
Is ridiculous. It's almost like it was a protest vote because of the strike.
So that was a strike shortened year, and 87 was a strike shortened year. If you are a youngster, we know we have a couple that might listen, want some context. How did the Bears, who went 15-1 and 14-2, and then beat the shit out of the team that also went 14-2 and won it all the year before, how did they like not do anything? And the strike happened, and I mean, there's no answer, like no easy answer for it. But I do like to point out that it wasn't long after that Giants game that we just broke down that the bloom kind of started to come off the road. McMahon couldn't stay healthy, but he was there. I mean, things still lined up. The Bears hosted a playoff game at home and had the road pay for a playoff game for the championship game. Could they beat the Redskins? And they had McMahon. But to get to that point, they had the strike. The Bears won a couple games. Ditka kind of – a lot of people claim that he alienated the players, and which is funny because Ditka was such a management suck-up, but that's the same guy that sounded like a socialist when, as a player, he's ripping George Halas for throwing around nickels like manhole covers. And, Ditka was getting full of himself. We saw it in this game, and he was enjoying it, and at that point it seemed well-deserved. But it seems in pretty short order, Ditka really kind of, I feel, just as a personality and as a coach, just kind of got a little full of himself, because I do remember thinking that, or reading at the time, that like player, how Ditka so quickly kind of disrespected the players that had been striking, because the Bears happened to win their first two strike games, which were absurd and ridiculous. It happened a couple weeks after this Giants game. They lost one with Sean Payton at quarterback, but like Ditka was so obviously on ownership side as a coach, forgetting his player bona fides. And I do remember like sort of hearing where some players were a little bit miffed about how quickly he could change his colors. And not that that should have any effect on how they play. That team did have a home game in the playoffs. They did go to the title game the next year. I think, maybe I should examine it more. Maybe they were completely dominant for longer than I remember. But
this team, the 87 team should have gone to the Super Bowl. They should have gone back. They lost to the Redskins on the only punt return for a touchdown of Daryl Green's career.
But it shouldn't have come down to that.
No,
either,
but that's
though,
what I'm saying.
Right?
I mean, even with that, they only scored 17 points in the freaking game.
Because, and we talked about it before, because the day before, the Vikings with Anthony Carter and went and stunned the perennial favorite 49ers, right, which
it
paved the way for the Bears.
It was,
if they could only
beat
the Redskins,
you're
going to
beat the
Vikings.
Just beat them again, and you go to the Super Bowl.
In 87. And then you'd beat the shit out of the Broncos again.
The other thing about it was, this is another good example of how bear weather is bullshit. That Redskins game was ridiculously cold.
It was colder than the 88 championship.
Wind chill of 20 below zero. It was 4 degrees at kickoff. Yeah. And the Bears offense played like shit. I think everybody, and whenever they think of bear weather, they always think of the two games, you know, the
back-to-back years.
The Giants and Rams. It's like, well, they were going to win those.
No.
They could have played those on the sun. They would have won those games.
Right. And then back-to-back years, they get sent home. One, a freezing cold game. They're both cold.
Pusateri and I talked about it yesterday. Bear weather is bullshit anyway, because what do bears do in the winter? They go into a cave and they hibernate. They find a roof and they get under it. So
the last time,
so the dome in Arlington Heights will literally be bear weather. I just hope the bears stay awake.
The last time bear weather was literally a thing would be like 1938, when all the teams were company teams and they played locally, and teams from the Midwest had might not have had an advantage because their players were all from the Midwest.
Shouldn't the sneakers game have been bear weather? Is it what it was?
Yeah.
And they lost that game.
Yeah, they got crushed.
They had to play one in the manure in Chicago Stadium, and they won that one, right?
Right. You think that
they've won a championship playing in a dome. They won it in, because Chicago Stadium is basically a dome. They've already won. They won their only Super Bowl in a dome. You should certainly want them to have a roof, because clearly it's the key.
Right. You're right. Yeah, it's never made so much sense to me before tonight. But
I mean, we talked about the bear weather got buried forever when the Niners,
of course,
and just beat the shit out.
Well, but you're right though. It is instructive to point out, even though Washington's not from like the wine and cheese part of the West Coast, but the year before,
they're in the Mid-Atlantic. It ain't exactly. It's their winter is mild.
That snow melts right away.
Yep.
They came in, and that was that. That's when the end. So this is how the season ends. Let's wrap up with this. The season begins euphoric. Like, we're going to be right back in the Super Bowl. We've lost three games since 83. It's 80 or three games since 84. It's 1987. And of course they would only lose four games, you know, in the 87 season, but they would get the home game. And then if they would just win it, they'd get another home game. It was so set up. And that's really where the disappointment, like, it was never really the same after that game. Everyone talks about the 49ers game, but I kind of feel like you're right. I didn't even think about it before tonight, but the 87 season should have been, it was kind of tailor-made for them, because the Giants had their year the year before. The one thing I will say is that the Bears in 85 were one of the most dominant teams ever, and nobody would have stopped them, just like the Niners the year before were 15-1. And I will grant this to New York, and a lot of people don't agree with me. We didn't have Jimmy McMahon, fine, but like, you can't go on provisionals. But in 86, I will concede that no matter what, even if the Bears beat the Redskins with Doug Flutie at quarterback, that it was the Giants' year. Yeah, both teams in 14-2. I'm willing to concede that. All right. I'm very gracious of me. But beginning in 87, there was the opportunity, and the Bears, you know, continued to dominate until at the end of the season, Joe Gibbs. Fucking, for the second year in a row, Joe Gibbs made sure that after Mike Ditka embarrassed him in RFK in 84, you were never going to let that happen again. And for the second year in a row, and we had McMahon. We had Flutie the year before. Yeah. We didn't have any excuses. We had McMahon. We had Gault. We had Covert. Like, you know, Covert wasn't there in the 88 game, right? That was one of the problems. 80, right? Or no? No, I'm sorry. I have that wrong. Covert was not there.
I don't remember when he fucking was back.
No, that was later. Similar, but beside the point. But they had all the pieces in 87. So what was the problem? You know, was McMahon never fully healthy? Was Ditka just a shithead that couldn't keep up with the Walshes and Gibbses? Maybe, or maybe that's too harsh. He didn't have a quarterback. They didn't have a good organization. It comes back to the McCaskey family, that they were been so dysfunctional for so long. They didn't even have a GM back then. They weren't built to keep up with the Giants and the Niners and the Redskins. They did as good as they could because they were overloaded with talent, but they just were not operationally as sound. I don't know. But all I know is that on the night of was September, whatever the fuck, when they faced the Giants, we were still absolutely luxuriating in one of the just the greatest football teams that that we'll see. So
yeah.
Yeah, I'll take it, I guess.
September 14th, 1987. So
there it is.
The last thing, the Bears had 9 sacks. Wilbur had 3. Mike Singletary had 2. And then one each for Todd Bell, Richard Dent, Dan Hampton, and Otis Wilson.
Oh, they all got a piece. Like, just like in the wild, everybody got a bite. It was satisfying. Kids, if you've listened this far, find the 2-hour and 37-minute game. It is a little blurry, but I don't know. Maybe because we live through it, never gets old.
I don't know. Or you can watch the 17-minute and 37 one hosted by Angelo Abella and Andy Smart.
I gotta tip my hat to these two chaps. You know, a couple of English boys, a couple of British boys. You know, just fascinated with the American game that they have the nerve to call football.
Well, and this is perfect timing that we did this because you get to get up early Sunday morning and there's a game on NFL Network. They're in London. So we get a quadruple header on Sunday. You get the London game, then you get the normal noon games. You get Bears Giants. Then you get the 3 o'clock games. And then you get the Sunday night football.
We got to tie that in.
All right, so that'll do it for the 87 Bears. But
my pleasure. That was enjoyable.
I'm sure the game on Sunday, these Bears and these Giants, same thing. Another clash of Titans.
Yeah, seriously, people, watch this 87 game right before noon kickoff. Right.
And then see if you think they're playing the same sport that they played back then. All right. Well, thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
Many of us have herpes.
I just want this to be over.